This is the Irrationally Exuberant. I'm Reed Messerschmidt.
Ahoy hoy, my friend. Welcome to another episode of the Irrationally Exuberant. And I guess I should say, Merry Christmas. 'Tis the season, after all.
Oh, brother.
That second scoffing voice you're hearing is my co-host for the first portion of the episode. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm welcome to my good friend, Foam Chomsky, the skeptical puppet.
I'm a puppet. You're the one that's buying the bill of goods the government is selling us about 9/11. Open your eyes, man. Jet fuel doesn't burn hot enough to melt steel girders. It was an inside job. Bootstrap the towers! Bootstrap the towers!
Whoa! Foam Chomsky coming in hot. Why don't you cool it for a second, little buddy, and let me get to the topic.
And what's that? Chemtrails? I've got a lot to say about chemtrails.
It's not chemtrails. What is with you and conspiracy theories, Foam Chomsky? Your namesake doesn't go in for that type of thing.
My namesake? What's that supposed to mean?
Noam Chomsky.
Never heard of him!
All right. We're going to be talking about the reason for the season. The birth of Jesus and the Catalonian tradition of the Kaganer.
Fluff!
What's that?
I said it's fluff!
Oh, fluff. I suppose it is. But not everything in life can be about subverting the paradigm, Foam Chomsky. It's Christmas, for fuck's sake. Have a little Christmas spirit, you old Scrooge.
Fair enough.
Well, all right. That's very big of you. Let me just cue up the music. All right. The year was 6 BC.
You sure about that, Chief? What about the conflicting references in the Bible to Herod's reign and the census of Quirinus, which didn't even happen until 10 years after Herod's death? Huh? What about that? The dates don't match up, bucko!
True, there is some debate over the actual date.
Which is completely beside the point, because this is all Christian propaganda. There's no proof that any of this happened, and in fact, there's copious proof that it didn't!
Listen, Foam Chomsky, you and I aren't so different. I don't believe this stuff any more than you do. It's obviously myth-building, but it's a nice story. Can't you just appreciate a nice story?
Not when that quote-unquote nice story has been used to propagate an institute as corrupt as the Christian Church and manipulate the ignorant hordes.
Point taken, but this is a comedy podcast. Can you just let me tell the nice story with the caveat that everything that follows is complete and utter bullshit and none of our listeners should believe a word of it?
Fair enough.
I really hope you mean it this time. I'm going to tell the story now. The untrue story which no one should, under any circumstance, use to further the exclusionary, colonialist, and often hateful agenda of the Christian Church.
Thank you!
The year was 6 BC, or something close to it. The month was December, and just to pacify Foam Chomsky, let me say it probably wasn't. The traditional date of Christmas is based on a pagan holiday marking the winter solstice. The story is a well-known one. We have Mary, a young woman who is, embarrassingly, primarily remembered as a virgin, the nerdiest, weakest thing you could ever possibly be, even though she ended up having other kids, so we know she got laid at some point. And we have her incredibly understanding husband, Joseph, an older man who would have been, I guess let's go with crucified, in today's society, correctly, I might add, for his relationship with a 14-year-old girl. Like, this Joseph guy gets away with it, but Jerry Lee Lewis is a monster? What's up with that?
Seriously? Don't you have any concept of cultural or historical relativism?
I do, Foam Chomsky. I was just making a joke.
It would help if your jokes were the least bit funny and not littered with obscure cultural references. Why on earth would you expect anyone to remember that Jerry Lee Lewis, a musician whose peak was 6 decades ago, married his 14-year-old cousin and was summarily and correctly deemed a pariah?
That's kind of the whole point of this podcast.
Whew! Who would listen to such a thing?
I know. Anyway, God informs Mary via an angel that she is to bear his child. A little rapey in that he's clearly taking advantage of his position of power, but what are you going to do? She consents, and he ghost fucks her, and she goes on to live with her cousin Elizabeth, who just so happens to be pregnant with John the Baptist, the wild man of the woods who wears leaves and eats acorns and will baptize Jesus in 30 years. John the Baptist literally jumps for joy inside of Elizabeth when the two unborn children come near to each other. And yes, Foam Chomsky, I know that the timeline here doesn't mesh at all, and the story, even in the context of Christianity, is heavily debated and probably apocryphal. Eventually, Mary decides that she has to tell Joseph, and he initially wants to call off the wedding, but an angel comes to him as well. In the book of Matthew, not the book of Luke, the two books vary wildly in their telling of the story. And he decides to get hitched to this knocked-up kid after all. What a guy. Sounds kind of like a freaky-deaky sex pervert if you ask me, but no one did. Hootsuite. They get married at a beautiful ceremony in a cute little villa in the woodworking district of Nazareth, the town that the band Nazareth is named after. But then they have to hoof it over to Jerusalem because of a census that wouldn't actually happen for another 15 years or so. When they get there, all of the hotels are booked, and they end up staying in a manger with a bunch of animals. It probably smelt a lot like animal shit in there. And the flies. Oh, the flies. There must have been a lot of flies on account of all the animal shit, is my point. Mary has the baby, and the angels sing, and some shepherds show up, and then some magi from the east who have followed a star which may actually have been Neptune, and they bring weird gifts and sing the baby's praises. Fun fact. The magi didn't actually show up until Jesus was like 2, but that's not very convenient in terms of storytelling. So the whole scene is very magical and serene. The North Star is shining. The angels are hovering and singing angelically. The animals, the shepherds, and the magi are all admiring the inexplicably white baby who is lying quietly in a trough on some straw. Mary and Joseph are just kind of basking, taking it all in.
You're right. That is a nice story.
It is, isn't it? It's got a real draw, even for two old crumb bums like ourselves. It's peaceful and comforting and nice. It still gives me a real warm feeling. I don't know about you, Foam, but I was raised Lutheran.
I'm made of foam!
Well, I don't subscribe to that system of beliefs anymore, and in fact, think that they are pretty ridiculous. I do have some very fond memories of going to church on Christmas Eve and hearing that story every year. And let's not forget A Charlie Brown Christmas. That shit was moving as all get out. But let's get to the part of the story the church doesn't often, if ever, tell you about. A part of the story that only the Catalonians have the fortitude to celebrate. A part of the story that, if I know America at all, and I think I do, it's often been said that I've got my finger on the prostate of America.
Ew!
Will become a short-lived internet phenomena here very soon, resulting in a moderately successful Christmas movie before becoming stale and then re-emerging again in 6 years or whatever the nostalgia cycle has shrunk to by that time. I'm referring, of course, to the nativity substory of the Kaganer. By the way, Foam, in case you were wondering, I know it's pronounced Ejoner, but I think Kaganer sounds better. It's a choice I've made, and I'm sticking with it.
You should also probably mention what it means.
You are absolutely right. It's Catalonian for the crapper. Back to the story. While Jesus and Mary and Joseph and all the rest were basking in the warm glow of the Holy Spirit, a young man whose name has been lost to time was pacing behind the manger. We don't know who he was exactly or why he was there. We only know that he wore the traditional garb of a Spanish peasant. That is to say, sandals, black pants, a red cummerbund, a white linen shirt, and a floppy red hat with a black band. Why was he wearing the traditional garb of a Spanish peasant in this particular setting at this particular time? Great question. But if you're going to ask that, you have to ask this. What were three Asian astronomer kings doing there? It's best not to delve too deeply into the nativity story because it's flimsier than the collar on a third-hand polo shirt. In addition to what he was wearing, we also know what he did and that prior to the act that would cement his place in history, he paced. He paced for two reasons. First, because he had no gift for the newborn king of the Jews. He was ashamed and nervous. Second, he had to defecate, as you do.
As you do.
Now, the young man, who would become known as the Kaganer, knew that he was witness to a historic event. There was a chorus of angels in the sky, for Christ's sake. But in the hierarchy of awareness, physical discomfort always wins, and there was no way he'd be able to properly drink in the birth of humanity's savior with a half pound of digested foodstuffs knocking on his back door. He continued to pace, uncomfortable and anxious, clenching and sweating, until it occurred to him, like a stomach pang, that he could kill two birds with one turd, as it were. His feces would be the gift.
This is horrific.
I know. I don't usually go in for this scatological stuff either, but You just wait, Foam Chomsky. It gets very beautiful. This peasant, despite his lot in life, was no rube. He knew full well that he could not present the human embodiment of God with two fistfuls of dung. He did consider filling his hat and offering the poo in that, but quickly dismissed the idea. This would be an anonymous gift, a symbolic offering. Though Jesus would never benefit from its bequeathment, the Kaganer could sleep easy at night knowing that he'd done the best he could. And so, eyes squinted and lips pursed in grim determination, the Kaganer fulfilled his destiny. He lowered his trousers, bent at the knees, and squatted a holy grumpy. And it was going great at first. But just as he was completing the dirty doings, he heard a shout, and the mood of the holy scene changed dramatically. He noticed for the first time that the slats of the manger were not flush. Not flush at all. In fact, there were massive gaps between many of the boards, and now everybody inside, the Holy Virgin and her husband, the kings of the Orient, the shepherds, the angels, even the baby Jesus, had turned to him and was watching him shit, mouths agape, silent. "My God!" exclaimed one of the kings. The Kaganer mumbled some words of apology while fumbling to get his trousers up around his waist, and then he just stared back at them, unsure of what to do. Nobody said a word. He was about to turn heel and book it the fuck out of there when something extraordinary happened. The baby Jesus, in his first act of grace, loudly shit all over the hay he was lying on. A real shit show, as it were. And everybody began to laugh and laugh. They welcomed the Kaganer into their midst and went back to basking in the Savior's beautiful, stanky aura until the first light of day, when each group went their separate ways, promising each other that they would stay in touch forever, which, as everyone knew even then, was a lie. Oh, Foam Chomsky, what's the matter?
It's just so beautiful, you know? But also, like, sad. Because they shared such an incredible moment, and then they just didn't see each other again. What became of the Kaganer?
Unfortunately, that is something we may never know. But we do know this. The story of the Kaganer goes on to this day. In Catalonia, anyway. What is Catalonia, you ask? It's an autonomous region of Spain whose capital is Barcelona. May I continue now? Thank you. Please stop interrupting me. The tradition of the Kaganer goes back as far as 250 years in Catalonia and neighboring parts of Europe. Its origins are unclear, aside from that story I just told you, and listen, I'm sorry for losing my temper just a moment ago. Can you forgive me? Bless your heart. The Catalonian nativity scene is similar to the one Americans are used to, but much larger. It can encapsulate the entire town of Bethlehem, including trees, grass, the inn with no vacancies, a Blockbuster video, two Radio Shacks, a Bennigan's, and various peripheral characters, like a washerwoman by a river, and our friend, the Kaganer, depicted in his peasant clothes with his rear end hovering over a little brown dollop of clay. He has moved around the scene, and children get to search for him, like a fecal Waldo. Come to think of it, the Kaganer and Waldo are quite similar. Perhaps Martin Hanford was a Kaganer fan. Anyway, it sounds like a lot of fun. But what does it mean? Why have Spaniards placed a shitting man in the midst of the holiest of scenes? This is not entirely clear, but many believe he was originated as a symbol of regeneration and Christ's inherent humanity. That seems like a stretch, though. Mostly, I think people just throw it in there for a laugh. The Kaganer industry has grown in recent years to include figures of celebrities ranging from the Pope to David Beckham to Barack Obama to Gigi Allen, I hope, all posed in the traditional Kaganer fashion. Again, a lot of fun, and I ask you this. Why are we not doing this in the U.S.? There is nothing Americans love more than Christmas, scatological humor, and buying things. Throw celebrities into the mix, and you've got a sure thing. Go to it, Etsy stores, and after that, corporate fat cats. I've got a young son, and I'll be goddamned if I'll allow him to celebrate one Christmas without a Kaganer. And yeah, I know I could order one from Spain, but the shipping is prohibitively expensive. Again, I'm so sorry for that outburst. Foam Chomsky, I think you're rubbing off on me.
Foam Chomsky has subverted the paradigm once again!
Oh, Foam. Will you never change? Has the story of the Kaganer taught you nothing?
I suppose it has. Merry Christmas, Reed.
Oh, that's sweet. Merry Christmas to you, Foam. and Merry Christmas to everyone, everywhere. And in the spirit of Christmas, I'd like to present all of you with a gift. The arrival of a new Christmas classic is a very rare event indeed. The great majority of the carols we sing each year have existed since time immemorial, or so it seems at least. The last time a new Christmas song made the scene was in 1994 with Mariah Carey's indelible classic, All I Want for Christmas Is You. Before that, it was 1984's Last Christmas by the Simon and Garfunkel of the 80s, Wham! We've now gone a full 21 years without a new song to warm our hearts during this magical season, but I am happy to say that long dry spell ends here. The Irrationally Exuberant is prideful and honorable to present to you, for the first time anywhere, a brand new holiday classic, O'Kagener, written and performed by the one, the only, Basil Hazard. So, without further ado, please snuggle up to a loved one and enjoy O'Kagener.
It was a night in Bethlehem, like no other. You had the newborn baby Jesus and his mother, and Joseph and the angels and the magi, and the animals and shepherds. And one other guy. O'Kagener, you did the best thing you could do. You gave the baby Jesus a pile of poo. O'Kagener, don't feel bad. You gave the King of the Jews everything that you had, and we could all stand to learn a couple lessons from you. O'Kagener, when the dirty deed was done, the Kagener was surprised to find everyone in the nativity staring with wide eyes. But before the sea could reach, he'd angrily peek. The baby Jesus led a toy to share out from his butt cheeks. O'Kagener, you did the best thing you could do, and the baby Jesus gave you a pile of poo. O'Kagener, don't feel bad. You gave the Lord and Savior everything that you had, and we could all stand to learn a couple lessons from you. O'Kagener, you did the best that you could do, and you gave the baby Jesus a pile of poo. O'Kagener, don't feel bad. You gave the King of Kings everything that you had, and we could all stand to learn a couple lessons from you. O'Kagener, 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 O'Kagener.
Christmas, a time of joy to the world, and tinsel, and goodwill towards men, and presents, and carols, and Santa Claus, and sweaters, and jingle bells, and fa-la-la-la, and Home Alone, and Home Alone 2 Lost in New York, and Dickens, and stockings, and coal, and candy, and Jesus, and Chevy Chase, and Bing Crosby, and David Bowie, and Rudolph, and eggnog, and fruitcake, and earmuffs, and protect the Goomas, and Die Hard, and ribbons, and bows, and wrapping paper, and snow, and Frosty, the man of snow, and Ebenezer Scrooge, and oyster stew, and holly, and elves, and candy canes, and Parson Brown, and Wham, and fir trees, and Donner, and Dancer, and Mariah Carey, and wreaths, and sleds, and green, and red, and mistletoe, and scarves, and gingerbread men and women, and Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, and Charlie Brown, and Jingle All the Way, and Very Large Grapes, and The Grinch, and Tim Allen. It's a wonderful time, filled with wholesome good cheer for all Americans. Graydon Camacho Sr. is one of those Americans. He's got a good job over at the Brenthurst Kitten Euthanization Center in southern Wisconsin, where he personally euthanizes tens of thousands of kittens each year. He and his family, wife Mammotha Dunker Camacho, sons Fudgley and Graydon Jr., and their lovable mutt Cheddarwurst, live in a beautiful trailer on the nice end, the east end, of the Gristle Creek Trailer Park, right between Old Dong Hill and the Tasty Freeze. They celebrate Christmas like millions of others in this country. The trailer is decorated with the same cheap garbage the family has used since the early 80s, newspaper-wrapped gifts of fart jokes in t-shirt form and secondhand Jeff Dunham DVDs are exchanged, and they all get dolled up in their best pleated Salvation Army khakis and ill-fitting sweaters, hairs drenched in hair jelly, to go to the Christmas Day service at St. Huckleberry's Pentecostal Church. Then they plop their fat asses down on the sunken family couch with their hungry man frozen dinners to watch their favorite Christmas movie, Fred Claus, before drifting off to sleep, where they sit until sleep apnea shakes them all awake to stumble to their respective beds. But Graydon Camacho Sr. has a secret that could tear his family apart. Graydon Camacho Sr. is an unauthorized Kagan. Graydon asked that we alter his voice, though he allowed us to use his real name.
I've been dropping dirties behind nativity scenes since 2007.
It all began as most things have in Mr. Camacho Sr.'s life, at a bar.
It was at the Feisty Squirrel. You have to remember the time. Bush was still our president. Britney Spears was going fucking nuts. And Chocolate Rain was sweeping the nation. It was a crazy time. Anyway, me and Shoop, that's my best friend, Fudgley Shooper. Named my kid after him. We was getting pretty shwasted after a long day of killing cats. And there was this other fella there, this handsome dude with a mustache, kind of faggy looking, but not like flaming, you know, like kind of cool faggy. And he was talking Spanish. I know it was Spanish because I hear Chalupa at the factory. His name's not really Chalupa, that's just what we call him on account of he's a Mexican. I hear Chalupa talking that nonsense on the phone to his wife all the time. And I'm always like, talk fucking English, you dumb spick. He's a good guy though. Anyway, it's funny that this guy's talking that shit because he's white. We don't think much of it, though, him being there. There's a lot of freaky people at the Squirrel because they won't kick you out for anything. Not like that other fancy sports bar across the street, Horseplay. They'll kick you out just for lighting a firecracker. I know, because they bounced me for that very thing last year. You'd think with a name like Horseplay, they'd be more lenient, but they ain't. We call it Horsefuckers now. I came up with that. Anyway. We go about our business taking shots of Canadian mist and eating pickled eggs, the usual for Wednesday night, and eventually, inevitably, Shoop dares me to take a shit on the bar. He does this all the time and I never do it because that's gross, but something came over me that night, probably because it was the Christmas season and I'd smoked a fair amount of meth in the bathroom earlier, so I grabbed a Santa hat that Skinflap, the bartender, we call him Skinflap on account of he's covered in these skin tags, it's gross. Anyway, I took the Santa hat Skinflap was wearing, and I put it on, and I hopped up onto the bar and hung my butt out from my red sweatpants, lifted up my Big Johnson t-shirt, and I took a shit right there. And everyone was laughing like you wouldn't believe. And the guy with the mustache starts yelling, "Cake on air! Cake on air!" And I hiked up my pants real quick. I come to find out later there was still quite a bit of shit left in them. The old lady wasn't too happy about cleaning up that mess. And I jumped off the bar and ran over to him. I was gonna kick his ass for calling me names. I said, "What the fuck did you just call me, you albino fucking Mexican asshole?" But then he explained that the Caganer was this tradition they have in Spain and that everybody loves the Caganer. He offered to buy me and Shoop drinks and tell us all about it, and it was the most beautiful story I'd ever heard. Changed my life. I never did see that guy ever again. I wish I could thank him or punch him out. I haven't decided which yet.
Graydon was inspired. The story of the Caganer, a plucky peasant that did the best he could do despite his meager means, was not just hilarious. It rang true for him. The seventh child of a schnapps-soaked layabout and his dead-eyed wife, who had lifted himself up by his frayed bootstraps to be slightly less awful than his parents and live in a slightly nicer trailer. His car is worse than his dad's had been, though. He decided on that fateful December evening that it was his mission in life to pay tribute to the Caganer, to bring recognition to this unheralded patron saint of the American working man. Never mind that he was a Spaniard. A fellow with that kind of pluck and fecal obsession with stars and stripes from the tip of his funny hat to the dirty, clamshelled toenails sticking out from his battered sandals. Graydon got his chance to pay his first tribute when, on his way home that night, he stumbled past an illuminated plastic nativity scene in front of a ramshackle rambler. It was not to be, though. Not that night.
I didn't have no more shits left in me.
The next evening, he returned to make it right, and hasn't looked back since. Dropping deuces behind every depiction of the holy event in the Tri-County area, from church murals to live scenes.
I've squatted grumpies behind hundreds of nativity scenes. You show me a portrayal of the birth of Jesus and I'll sure shit take a crap behind it. The live scenes are the hardest. You gotta be real quiet. But sometimes your asshole betrays you. People don't know this, but the asshole muscle is the most willful and unpredictable of any muscle in the human body. Sometimes it's gonna make some noise no matter how careful you are. That's when you have to run. Sometimes through a lot of snow while wearing sandals. Sometimes with a half poo in your pants. I ain't not never been caught though. I'm fast. Played football in high school. Go Slugs. Came pretty close once to getting caught, that is. It was a nativity scene they was holding inside of a church during a church service, which made it tricky. I had to walk in my Sunday duds with the Caganer getup on underneath and sit through the most boring sermon you ever heard. It was about them horseshit gifts those magicians brought to the baby Jesus, frankfurters and a merman or some such thing. Total goddamn nonsense. What the fuck is a baby supposed to do with all that? And these guys being magicians and all, they could have conjured up most anything, I imagine. They could have given him a four-wheeler, for example. Now, I know four-wheelers didn't exist at this time, but these fellas were skilled in the dark arts, so you can't sit there and tell me, into my face, that they were constrained by such things as time. But no, they bring some highfalutin nation junk, not like the Caganer. He weren't no magician or nothing, didn't have nothing, but he did the best he could. Anyway, I'd been kind of thinking that maybe I would skip this one because I couldn't figure out a sure thing escape route. But then he started talking this fuckery and I just couldn't walk away without shitting behind that manger. These people needed it to remind them of the true meaning of Christmas, you know? So the lights get real low and the actors take their positions. I excused myself saying I had to go to the bathroom, which, by the way, wasn't a lie. I didn't say where I had to go to the bathroom. I'm a good Christian man. I don't lie in church. So I get in the men's room and I strip down to my Caganer outfit and I sneak as quiet as you please back into the service and I get behind the backdrop of the thing. It was like a sheet with a depiction of Bethlehem on it. And I pop out my pooper and I get to pooping and like right away this greasy grandma screams because I guess you could see my silhouette through the sheet and it was just pandemonium in there and I had to stiff arm three old fellas and the pastor, which I feel terrible about, and then sprint to my car with 20 folks right on my tail, and it was pounding on my windshield, but I revved the engine, and I got a pretty good engine in my car, even though it's kind of a beater, so I guess they knew I meant business. And they kind of backed off, and I sped away into the crisp winter night.
Had he been caught, Graydon Camacho Sr. would have certainly gone to prison. And since he has two felony convictions in his past, one for selling counterfeit Eddie Money t-shirts outside of an Eddie Money concert in 1984, and the other for selling cocaine to a man he thought was Eddie Money but turned out to be an undercover police officer in 1994, he most certainly would have done significant time. So why does he continue doing it?
Well, I ain't sure I ever put the reason I do this into words, but let's see what I can pull out of my proverbial butthole. Let me start by telling you the meaning of Christmas as I see it, and then I'll explain how this Kaganer business fits into that. Now, I know a guy like you with your fancy microphones and iron chinos and shirt buttons and whatnot looks at a guy like me wearing a worn-out, pit-stained shirt with balls deep emblazoned across the front and thinks he's got a real rube on his hands. But I ain't no rube. I'm trash, no doubt about it, but I ain't no rube. I know just as well as you fruity fucking liberals that the Christmas season as we know it, shit as it's ever been known probably, has a very tenuous relationship with the actual birth of Jesus. I know it's commercials all get out and something of a capitalist scale. But goddammit, despite all that, maybe because of all that, it still means something. It's still a reminder of our basic shared personhood. Even if you're not a Christian, even if you're a godless queer or a black or an alcoholic good-for-nothing piece of white garbage who, for most of the year, just uses their religion as a justification for their deep-seated ignorance, hate, and fear like yours truly. Whatever angle you come at it from, Christmas has a certain undeniable feel to it. It's an oasis of warmth in the midst of the literal winter, and of the figurative winter of the collective soul or consciousness or whatever you want to call it. It's about basic humanity, to make a long story short. Which brings me to the Kaganer, because what is more human than taking a shit? I'd argue the answer to that is nothing, though I can think of a thing or two that I won't get into now that could be considered its equal. So the story of the Kaganer. You have this guy, a poor fella, completely out of his element, literally in the presence of God. And what does he do? He asserts his humanity in the most basic way possible. Now, he doesn't really have a choice. No one does. You can't help but to assert your humanity every moment of every day, whether you like it or not. But what he does is reframe his base humanity as something beautiful and selfless. A humble gift. And that's where the power of the Kaganer lies. It takes something disposable, reviled, and downright revolting, not unlike myself and literally everyone I know, and it makes that thing that no one wanted into an offering fit for God. Like I hope to be. And that hope, mere idea of reframing my humanity as a gift, that's an idea that I am willing to risk my freedom for. Now, if you'll excuse me, it's getting dark and I've been holding in a poop for several hours, so I need to go deposit it behind some children play acting a scene from the Bible at the church on 24th Street, and you'll need to get the fuck out of my trailer. Ta-ta, motherfucker.
Thank you for listening. Merry Christmas.